Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of CookieCast. Today on CookieCast, it's the football podcast. The football season is drawing to a close. For some, it very much is. For others, it may not quite be. Find out what I mean by that by listening or watching to this podcast. Before we get started, please do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. Obviously the biggest one is share the podcast around. If you've got a football fan in your life, send them this podcast. They might appreciate it. They might thank you for it. Right, let's get started. Here we go. This is CookieCast, football podcast.
Recording in progress.
Nice indeed. Recording very much in progress. Welcome along, ladies and gentlemen, to your weekly instalment of football-based chatter with us right here, the CookieCast Podcast Network. For the eagle-eyed amongst you, you'll notice that there's not four smiling, happy faces staring back at you on your YouTube fix this week. Sadly, Mr. Moore, unable to join us this week, but we do have Mr. Cook and Mr. Woodmansey in his stead to go through the details of their teams, and we'll amongst the three of us, we'll try the best to pick up the Nottingham Forest-ness in Mr. Moore's absence. How are we this week, gents?
Yeah, not bad.
Personally, I'm gutted that I'm not winning the week, because, you know, Matt's not here.
Not going to be me.
Flick forward. No spoilers, but we'll get to that. So, week 39 brought with it four games. It did indeed, four games. The first of which was Mr. Cook's adopted team of Manchester City, who were travelling to the South Coast to take on Brighton and Hove Albion. And, to say this one was done as a contest as early as the 26th minute, probably too little of an understatement. Probably not. Kevin De Bruyne opened the scoring I'd like to say a trademark diving header, but I think we all know that would be absolute bullshit, as I believe... we were discussing off air, Mr. Woodmansey may have been brought up. This may have been his first headed goal in the Premier Division. But yes, you love to see a diving header, though. Let's be honest. It's one of those things. A diving header, a ball that goes in off the underside of the bar, they just look better than any other type of goal. An overhead kick. That was on the 17th minute, I believe. We should double check. Yep, 17th minute. And like we said, the game was wrapped up with the... in the 26th minute when Phil Foden got the first of his two goals. A deflected free kick.
Yeah, there was a deflected free kick, and was it his goal after that was absolutely rattled in the top bins?
It says a ruthless, according to skysports.com, a ruthless finish into the bottom left-hand corner from a Brighton mistake. I believe on another group chat I'm a part of, there was some consternation in the fact that Brighton persisted with playing out from the back, even though they'd been caught on more than one occasion.
Do you know what? I did actually see little bits of this. It feels like a long time ago, and I feel like I've watched a lot of football in the last week. But the free kick as well that was deflected in wasn't even a free kick. There was a little bit of theatrics from Philip. As it was, and they went down a little hastily, and when they picked it up on the cameras afterwards, it was minimal contact was how it was described, I believe, at the time. But that third goal, now that you've said about that, I remember that. It was effectively what our teams have been doing in the last 6 weeks or so, like pressing from the front, and just paid off. But of course, when Manchester City does it, everybody thinks it's the best thing ever, so...
So that was the third goal, I believe, in the... Oh, let me just double-check. The 34th minute, and the game was killed as a contest altogether in the 62nd minute when Julian Alvarez finished from close range after what Sky Sports described as good work by Kyle Walker. Unfortunately, I missed this game as I was not in the, in a position to be watching football at the time. Very sad. So yes, a very, very comprehensive 4-0 Manchester City win to start us off this week. You'll be surprised to hear that we had all picked a Manchester City victory. So we're all on the board to start the week off. Stu had gone 2-0 with Grealish and Doku to score the goals. So no goal scorer bonus, just the correct result. Matt had gone 2-1. Some guy called Pedro. Oh, João Pedro to score for Brighton. I was like, why have I just written Pedro? They don't have a guy called Pedro. João Pedro to score for Brighton. Alvarez and Foden to score for Manchester City. So two bonus points there for the goal scorers. Andy had also gone 2-0 and also had Alvarez and Foden. So two bonus points for his goal scorers there. I had gone 2-0 as well, but I had Foden and De Bruyne. So between the four of us, we did have all goal scorers covered, just in varying different degrees. So, 1 point for Stu, 3 points for the rest of us in our opening game. Our second game took us to the weekend's fixtures, and the first of which was Welsh-flavoured, as Cardiff City took on my boys Middlesbrough in a dead rubber. Do we have to travel all the way to fucking Cardiff for a game that means absolutely bugger all? But for the travelling Middlesbrough supporters, they were thoroughly, thoroughly well rewarded with a thumping 4-1 win. And I'm pretty sure I'd seen a stat, and I wish I'd recorded it now, but it was something like the last six games that the Borough have travelled to Cardiff, they've scored a minimum of 2 goals in each of the last 6 trips. Or something like that. And I'm pretty sure they won 4-0 or 4-1 at this ground last season. So, as it stands at the moment, Cardiff proving to be a very happy hunting ground for Borough as it stands.
When you're saying it about the Middlesbrough fans being like, oh, do we have to really go all the way to Cardiff? It's probably the home fans going, oh, fuck's sake, not again.
More than likely. And as we've discovered from your trip to Cardiff for the wrestling a number of years ago, a beautiful castle to take in whilst they're in Cardiff. So, you know, sightseeing, football, goals, what more could you possibly ask for? But yes, a 4-1 thumping Middlesbrough win. But it almost didn't turn out that way, as Cardiff almost took the lead within 4 minutes. A bit of a loose pass in the middle of the park from Rav Vandenberg, was pounced upon in the middle of the park by David Turnbull for Cardiff, spotted the keeper very far off his line and went for the speculative chip over the top. But Senny Dieng had got his sprinting boots on as he managed to just get back and just flick the ball over the top of the top of the bar to keep it at 0-0. But Borough did open the scoring, it was double-checked times. It was towards the end of the first half, I didn't know that. It was in the 45th minute. Borough got a free kick just outside the box. Finna Zaz stood over it and floated a lovely free kick, one of those arches all the way to the back stick. Matt Clark had run after his man and just fired in from about 4 yards out to get his first goal for the club. Cardiff had a chance to equalise pretty much straight away in the second half. But it was a bit of a combo of great goalkeeping by Senny Dieng and the post coming to his rescue that kept the ball out and the rebound made its way back into the 18-yard box but was blazed over by the Cardiff man. Borough took advantage of this and made it 2 on the 49th minute when Finn Azaz became the goal scorer as opposed to the goal provider. It was Alex Gilbert making his first start of the season. Had got onto the edge. It got to the edge of the box with the ball at his feet. Tried to run into the box, but it hit a defender, then hit him, then hit another defender, then hit him. Was basically ping ponging around in the net in the in the uh, 18-yard box, but did manage to find its way to the feet of Finazaz, who just smashed it home about 5 yards out to make it 2-0. Borough's third came when Cardiff were on the attack and they hit them on the counter. They won the ball back just outside their own box. The ball was played to Azaz, who made a long raking pass over the top. He'd spotted that the Emmanuel Latelaf had made the run. So he was still in his own half, so couldn't possibly be given as offside. Played this long raking ball over the top for Latelaf to run onto. Outpaced the defender. Finished neatly past the goalkeeper to make it 3. That was on the 56th minute, and the game was over as a contest completely on the hour mark, as the ball made its way out to the right-hand side, where the assist king himself, Luke Ayling, ran onto it and crossed deep. Sorry, he didn't cross deep, he squared the ball back to the edge of the box, where the arriving Mr. Gilbert himself rifled it straight into the top right corner for his first goal in a Middlesbrough shirt. He's looked quite good in the last couple of weeks as Gilbert. He's got a couple of assists in his previous games. He was given his first start against Cardiff, and he came very, very good. Cardiff did get a consolation goal in the 91st minute with a Josh Bowler strike, and as was summed up perfectly on the Twitter by all the Borough fans, it wouldn't be a Borough game if they didn't give a gift to the opposition team. Sonny Dieng was guilty of this one, was pissing about with it in his own box, played straight to the feet of Callum Robinson, squared the ball back in the box in the box where Josh Bowler was there to finish from 12 yards to give the Cardiff fans at least some something to cheer, having the fact that they'd just been spanked by the Borough. So yes, a 4-1 thumping win for my boys to round out their last away trip of the season. Podcast predictions wise, both myself and Matt had gone for a 1-1 draw on this one. I had GADU, Matt had Mate to score for Cardiff, so no points there. But we both had Latelaf to score for the Borough. Just a quick side note, that is Latelaf. He's now scored in 5 consecutive games. So a nice run for the Ivorian there. Stu and Andy both had a Borough win, so they get a point for the result there. Stu had... I apparently have not written down your second goal scorer, so you must have had Latelaf down to 2.
In the book, I have Latelaf and Azaz, and I'm not just saying that. I can show you last week's.
Azaz. I did not write down Azaz. I have to give you an extra point.
Because if you remember, I went on the basis of Cardiff had one lost, one, so therefore they were going to lose the Borough. And it came true.
It did come true indeed. Stu had Mate, and as we've just discovered, Latelaf and Azaz. So he gets himself 3 points for that. Andy had 2-0 with Latelaf and Barlaser. So sadly, just the one bonus point for Andy. So he gets 2. So, 2 games down. 4 points for myself, for Stu, and for Matt. Andy is currently in the league with 5 points. From 2 games. Our third game of the week, probably the one, well, certainly the one with the most riding on it, and absolutely the one with the most entertainment, took us to the 8 p.m. Saturday evening live on the Sky Telebox game of Hull City versus Ipswich Town. And I'm just going to turn this one over to you, as you were in person and you were watching this, and I can only assume catching your breath every couple of seconds, because it was pretty much action stations all throughout.
Yeah, it was a little bit slow to start, but obviously we'll get to the result in due course, but it might seem strange to say this, but this was probably the best game in terms of entertainment value I've seen all season. But yeah, so we'll get to the result in due course. So to begin with, City lined up in their away kit.
Apparently, yeah, I noticed that. Now, I didn't wonder why.
Well, apparently, there is a strange rule, which is probably still written on parchment somewhere in EFL headquarters from 1809 or wherever it might be, that you can designate one match a season to play your at home in your away kit. Rossini kept it for the last game of the season, and it was because we've performed better generally away from home this season, so he went with the away kit at home. I have to say, it's not the first time he's employed that tactic, because he did it last season as well, and it worked a treat at that point, so I can understand why he did it. However, the game was set up beforehand, not just because of the early kickoffs, but the day before this game happened, Leeds had lost 4-0 to QPR, which I felt was important to mention, because not only did that give Ipswich a bit of added motivation, but everybody loves to hear that Leeds lost 4-0.
At this point, I would just like to point out that I feel that Andy kind of manifested this one into existence by suggesting that Borough might beat them 5-0 the week before. So I feel
they're just all delayed, clearly.
The rest of the world basically needs to give Mr. Cook his flowers and thank him for the excellent work he's done in ensuring that Leeds don't go up automatically. Obviously, it's not done yet, but he certainly had a hand in it, let's put it that way.
The only problem with that result was that it then meant that should Ipswich win against Hull, it gave them that motivation that they might end up having sort of one foot in the Premier League. And indeed, they did take the lead on 19 minutes. So, you know, we've got this whole thing about if you've got an out-of-form striker or you've got somebody coming back from injury or something like that. Well, it was Hurst's first appearance in the side since Boxing Day, and he scored on 19 minutes. Ball came in from the right, which, to be fair, should have been easily cleared as it was played into the path of Tyler Morton, who absolutely missed it. Just, even if he had have got a connection on it, it would have spooned it. It just, unfortunately for the lad, just, it's about the only foot wrong he's put all season, I would suggest. But he completely missed it. Went straight into the path of Hurst, who smashed it into the bottom right-hand corner. Keeper didn't really have much chance because nobody expected it to get through. It had been a little bit nervy, I would say, up until that point. But that seemed to open up the game. And thankfully, Hull didn't lie down. And they definitely didn't deserve to be losing. And they were level. But it did take until the 40th minute. Jean-Michel Seri, again, much like the Manchester City goal that we discussed, much like some of the Hull goals and that have been scored in the last few weeks, Seri was pressuring. I believe it was Morsi as well, who was a dirty little bastard. So pressured him pretty much on the edge of his own box. But they managed to get defenders behind the ball. The goalkeeper just started flapping at it. However, he had the sight to play it to his left to Toufan. Toufan then did his best to hit it centrally into the goal. However, one of the defenders had taken up that position and he still managed to find the probably less than 1 foot gap above that player's head to make it 1-1. Unfortunately, though, that only lasted for 7 minutes. As Jaden Philogene, who, again, has to be said by myself on this podcast, is not having the greatest of times, despite being voted Young Player of the Year by the club in the end of season awards this week. He had the option. Basically, Hutchinson for Ipswich became free on the right-hand side of the edge of the 18-yard box. Philogene was the first man on the scene. Now, granted, I'm not a professional. Granted, I've only had very basic training. But in my limited capacity, it's always been show your man to the outside, don't let him get like goal side on you. And instead, he decided to just pretty much do nout. So let Hutchinson have the time, have the space, who picked out the top left-hand corner of the goal, absolutely rifled it in. Goal of the night in the game, as it would be. But unfortunately, that did leave City 2-1 down at half-time. Because that goal went in the second minute of injury time in the first half. Everybody gets that sinking feeling. Everybody's thinking, we know where this is going now. But after his mistake, Tyler Morton was brought off at half-time. I don't think that he necessarily played any worse. after that sort of unfortunate error had happened, but it was definitely one of the games where he wasn't as present as he normally is. So Morton off Delap on at half time, and that resulted in two chances in pretty much the first 2 minutes of the second half. Toufan missed a free header at the near post inside the 6 yard box, probably been the biggest of the two chances. However, the substitute himself, Delap, did make it 2-2. Cross from Carvalho down the right hand side, got across his man on the near post and smashed it into the net, which, as it happens, was right in front of me and my boys, so that was pretty good. Nice atmosphere, brings it back to 2-2. The atmosphere in the stadium, by the way, on Saturday night was probably the best atmosphere we've had all season. Wasn't quite a sellout, but it was very, very close to. But yeah, 24,500 people on late on a Saturday night when the game is on TV was a pretty decent turnout. Unfortunately, Ipswich took the lead once again, and it was almost a carbon copy of their second goal. Hutchinson was again given too much space on the right-hand side of the edge of the 18-yard box. This time it wasn't Philogene that left him hanging, it was just everybody. Nobody closed him down whatsoever. The nearest man to him was Omer, who, when he was lining up at the start of the game, I did have to look twice because I thought he was the same height as one of the mascots. But yeah, Hutchinson curled it left-hand side of the net. However, this time it didn't quite go in the top. It was a little bit lower down in the goal. Maybe the goalkeeper's positioning could have been a little bit better. Maybe it was just a good finish. He scored two cracking goals that night. And that was on the 67th minute. So City had the best part of like 25 minutes or so to try and do something about it. Omo was taken off. Ohio was substituted on 74 minutes. I let out a huge groan when this happened because Omo had been playing out of his skin again. Not really sure what Ohio was going to do. Apart from scoring the 87th minute, so to make it 3-3, the keeper had parried a header from a free kick out to his left, but it didn't really go too far left of the goal. Straight into the path of Ohio, who, as Paul mentioned earlier on, the best goals are always the ones that look like they've come off the underside of the bar. And it made it look an exciting goal from not very far out. But yeah, it made it 3-3. And after that, both sides still kept going for it, even though there was, we were deep into injury time by this point. But the final score was 3-3. Didn't really do anybody any favours either way, particularly. But as it's turned out with results, it didn't really do anybody any harm either. Because that's set the final weekend up in the respect now that if Hull win and West Brom lose, Hull will still make it into the playoffs. Regardless of West Brom's result, if Norwich take an absolute pasting and Hull paste Plymouth, there is still even a chance that they can sneak in there by knocking Norwich down a peg as well. So that's less likely. West Brom, I believe, are at home to Preston this weekend. And a Hull are away to Plymouth, which we'll obviously cover in the predictions very shortly. But yeah, I'll hand you back to Paul after that extensive match report to give out some points, hopefully.
Yes, very much. Just before we do go to do the points, just double check. Yeah, so West Brom-Preston is indeed their last game of the season. Obviously, if Preston had still been in with the shout of the playoffs, that game would have had a lot more riding on it than it currently does, and would have been a lot better for Hull. But yeah, it's I think it's a pretty straightforward proposal, isn't it? Basically, Hull need to win regardless.
Yeah.
Anything other than a Hull win and they'll finish in seventh. But, like Stu said, a Hull win and a West Brom loss will see Hull in the playoffs. A Hull win and a Norwich loss with a 7-goal swing will see Hull in the playoffs. We'll see Hull in the playoffs at its defence of Norwich, regardless of what West Brom do. I think if West Brom get a point, you're up against it because their goal difference is 11 better than yours. Yeah. So you're kind of hoping on Preston doing you a bit of a favour there.
So what you're saying is they need to win. If they're going to win, it needs to be 1-0, and we just need to beat Plymouth 12-0.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll do.
No, they need to draw.
Oh, of course, they need to. Yeah, so
if they win, you can beat Plymouth 50-0. It ain't gonna fucking matter.
Okay. Well, that makes it better then, because then if they draw, that means that we only need to win 11-0. So that's fine.
Exactly. Job done. That's the end of the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks very much. Thanks for joining in. We'll see you after Hull's incredible 17-0 away win.
You just wait until we get to the predictions. You'll enjoy it. You're fine.
Yes. So 3-3 enthralling draw. I believe, in fact, because we were watching, a film at the same time as I was trying to concentrate on the whole game, and I'm pretty sure when that Ohio goal went, I actually turned and went, "I snuck it in," and stuff like that. To which my wife was very much just like, "What's happened?" A 3-3 draw. Andy had gone for a 1-0 Hull win with a Delap goal. So no points for the result, but does get a bonus point for the goal scorer. I had gone for a 2-1 Ipswich win. Goals for Carvalho, Samiento and Moore. So I don't get any points at all for that one, sadly. Stuart had gone for a 1-0 Ipswich win with Chaplin. No points there. Matt had gone for a 1-1 draw. So gets a point for the draw. Philogene and Chaplin goals did not come in for him, though. So he gets just that one point. So what that means is going into our last game of the week, Nottingham Forest versus Manchester City, it sees myself and Stu on 4 points, Matt on 5 points, Andy on 6 points.
Just as a final note on that game, I didn't really have Ipswich down as a team that I didn't like for any particular reason. But my God, they are a dirty team. And from what I can tell, it stems from the manager. Having watched the highlights back, and for how many plaudits he gets for being really calm and like a really unflappable guy, I think I've watched the little clip of him when Hull's equaliser went in about 25 times now. As he absolutely tries to beat the shit out of the away dugout. Because he is flappable, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you from that clip. So, didn't particularly enjoy their let's collect as many yellow cards as we can style of play.
Let's see just how unflappable he is next season when Ipswich are getting beaten 7-0 each week by the likes of Arsenal, Man City and the like.
It'll be on his holidays back Christmas. It'll be fine.
Well, yeah, that's very true. So yes, our last game of the week sees Matt's team, Nottingham Forest, going up against Andy's team of Manchester City. And I think Forest actually started quite well in this one. They tried to put City on the back foot. They were having a lot of joy down their left hand side, which is strange because obviously Kyle Walker plays down the right side for Man City, and he's a very strong in that position, and famously very, very hard to outpace. And Ola Aina at least once had him basically on toast, which was kind of interesting to see. Sadly, though, Forest couldn't turn their possession and their chances into goals. The person that was most guilty of that was Chris Wood, unfortunately, who had at least two chances to open the scoring, and the less said about that, the better. But it was Man City that opened the scoring. A Josko Gvardiol header from a Kevin De Bruyne corner on the 32nd minute. Gvardiol just completely run off his marker. I believe it was Morgan Gibbs-White and just glanced in at the near post. A bit disappointing for Forest. And once they went 1-0 down, they were always going to be chasing the game to try and get back into it. And one became two in the second half, on the 71st minute. I believe it was De Bruyne again, who played the ball through for Haaland, one of his textbook sort of runs where he just runs into the channel, peels off the last defender, goes one way, cuts the ball back, and then angles it across the goalkeeper. Great finish. Standard Haaland. 2-0 Man City. Game over. Done and dusted. Probably still have a couple more chances, but as we said, Chris Wood was probably the one guilty of missing the most. And sadly, yeah, they couldn't get on the score sheet or get any goals back. So it was a 2-0 Manchester City win. We all had a Manchester City win, so we all get a point at least for that one. None of us had not a Forest score, so none of our Forest goal scorers got any points. Andy had gone 2-1 with Haaland and Alvarez to score, so a bonus point there for the Haaland goal. Matt had gone 4-1 Man City, and somehow managed to miss every single one of the goal scorers. Foden, Silva, De Bruyne and Grealish. Not one of them scored. How unfortunate. Stewart gone 3-1, and again missed all of the goal scorers. Alvarez, Foden, De Bruyne, none of them scored.
As we were talking about before we came on, we did these predictions one after the other, and all of those people scored in the goddamn Brighton game, so I've got my predictions the wrong way around.
I'd gone 3-1 City with Haaland, Foden and Alvarez, so I do get a bonus point for the Haaland goal there. So, 2 points for me, point apiece for Stu and Matt, 2 points for Andy, which means for the week, Stu, 5 points from 4 games. Myself, 6 points from four games. Matt, 6 points from 4 games, but taking the week and breaking the curse of the I don't know what it was. Is it a curse? Is it just a pattern? It's breaking the pattern, let's say that way. But yes, 8 points from 4 games. Well done, Mr. Cook. You've done it. You've beaten Matt when he's not on the podcast. Well done.
I'd like to. It's like some kind of reverse jinx. I'm like, oh, he's not here, so he's going to win again.
So, week 40 brings with it both the last games of the season for myself and Mr. Wobbinsey's team. As it stands, hopefully there'll be 3 more games for Hull. But it also brings with this a Forest and Manchester City games. We will start with Middlesbrough versus Watford once we've taken a short, swift break, and we'll be right back here. We'll be right back at you with those games. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Recording in progress.
And we're back. So, as we said, the first game of week 40's fixtures sees my lot Middlesbrough taking on Watford in what, at the start of the season, could potentially have been a battle for promotion game. You probably had these two teams in your top 6, your top 8, potentially. But as it turns out, it's basically more for how high can each team finish. Obviously, it's my team. I will give my prediction last. Let's go to Andy to kick us off. What have you got down for Middlesbrough versus Watford?
There are going to be a lot of similarities in my predictions this week. I feel all teams need to win. All of our teams need to win. So it's a 2-0 Borough win. Latte Laugh and Bar Laser.
It's that lovely time of the season where putting an accumulator on is even more difficult than normal, because you're either going to get two teams who can't be bothered and it'll be 0-0, or they'll just be going for it just for the sake of it. And just purely for entertainment value, I've gone on the air of the latter option. So I have gone for a 2-2 draw. I've got Latte Lath, the Mr. Inform himself, and Isaiah Jones to score for the Borough. And for Watford, I've gone for Semmer and Dennis.
Very nice. I too have gone for a 2-2 draw. Get the feeling that sort of it's one of those games, end of the season, nothing to play for. So both teams probably going to have a little play around with the team. You might see some players that you've never heard of before for the Borough. Ditto for Watford. Anyone that's sort of on the sort of fringes of the youth team who's had a good sort of spell for the youth team might want to blood him in this one because there's nothing on the line. Get him used to playing first team football. Give him a full pre-season. Get him in the first team for next season. So I've gone for 2-2 as well. I've gone for goals for Latte Laugh and, case in point, kid from the academy called AJ Matthews, who I believe has got 20-something goals in 17 games, currently being looked at by Premier League clubs. He's only 17, and apparently he's only got a year left on the contract that he signed a year or two ago. So there's talk that apparently if he can't agree a new contract, that he might go for a little bit of cash. So perfect time to play him, see what he's about. If he is going to go, maybe get a couple of extra zeros put on the end of that check. And I've gone for Bayo and Asprilla as my Watford goal scorers. Our second game is one of the more important games, as this was one of the ones that could see Hull into the playoffs if results go that way. Plymouth Argyle versus Hull City. Mr. Woodmansey's team, he will go last. I've gone with Hull getting the result they need, and then we'll see what happens with these other games. So I've gone for a 2-1 Hull win. I've gone for Whittaker to score for Plymouth, and then a goal apiece for Delap and Philogene. Now, obviously, this one comes with a little bit more on the line for Plymouth as well, as they are one of three teams that can still get sucked into the relegation zone. So as it stands, you've got Rotherham relegated on 24 points, Huddersfield all but relegated on 45 points. Their goal difference is horrendous. They need to win and hope that something that never happened before happens to be able to save them. And then the three teams that are in with a chance of going down, technically it's four. So you've got Birmingham in the final relegation zone in the final relegation place on 47 points. Then you've got Plymouth on 48, Sheffield Wednesday and Blackburn on 50. So Sheffield Wednesday and Blackburn probably in the driving seat. They know that a point will be enough. That'll see them safe. Plymouth need to hope that Birmingham don't get anything against Norwich, and then they'll be safe. However, if Birmingham win, Plymouth need to win to stay up. So it could get interesting. But I have gone for Hull to win 2-1. Andy?
So, take your prediction. Remove that other goal. We don't need that goal. And, there you go. Absolutely nailed on.
0-2 Delap and Philogene.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, he potentially had alluded to some sort of wackiness going on. Is he going to back a bit of a wacky finish for his boys? How is it going to play out, Mr. Woodmansey?
So, I need to preface this with, in the past, whenever we've needed something from the last game of the season, and I have been in attendance, we've drawn. That once upon a time worked in my favour in the sense of we needed to win or rely on other results. We played Swindon at home and it was a very nervous 0-0 draw, which is the only time I've ever seen a pitch invasion after a 0-0 draw, which was bizarre. However, for Hull, I am not in attendance this time as the game is all the way down in Plymouth. So I thought, sod it, why not? Let's have a 1-0 win. And I have also gone for Delap to score the goal.
0-1 Delap. Let's hope it ends up being enough to put Hull in the playoffs and extend their season by at least 2 years. Our third game of the week sees Sheffield United newly relegated Sheffield United, may I add, taking on Matt's team, Nottingham Forest. Now, obviously, Matt isn't here, so he can't go last, and he hasn't sent me any predictions, but we will leave the slot open in case he gets those in. So, let's go to Andy. What have you got down for Sheffield United versus Nottingham Forest?
The pattern starts to emerge right about here, because I've got a 0-2. And you know, boys, it's that time of the week where I have wood. And I've broken out my favourite Simpsons character for this week with Hudson Odoi.
Very nice. Stu?
I have gone for Sheffield United 1, Nottingham Forest 2. I've got Morgan Gibbs-White and Anthony Elanga for Forest. And just purely to watch your face, Brereton Diaz for Sheffield United.
God, I can't think whatever would have sort of given you the idea to do that prediction, mate.
Well, I hadn't seen that until you put it on camera, so...
Ah, actually, no, we haven't made the same one, because I've just got some guy called Brereton to score for Sheffield United.
Oh, you've got... Yeah, you've got the full racist version of the name.
I've got his non-Chilean dictatorish or dictator of the day counterpart or whatever it is.
You are just... All you are doing is denying his heritage, Paul. Just even if he can't speak the native language of his apparently adopted home country...
I believe he denied himself the heritage when he didn't have the surname Diaz attached to his name for the first 20 or so years of his life. Yeah, that's incredible.
You're always assured of: death, taxes, and Paul getting pissed off because of Brereton Diaz.
Listen, I've got absolutely no problem with someone appreciating their culture and adopting their own heritage and stuff like that. But when you find out you're eligible for a Hispanic country, just think, name doesn't sound that Hispanic, does it? What's the most Hispanic thing I can probably get away with? Just put the as at the end, mate. It's fine. Yeah, just add it on. What, as your full surname? No, just hyphenate. Just tack it on the end. All right, mate. You do that. You keep doing that, son. So yes, that is a pair of 2-1 wins for Nottingham Forest. Fingers crossed, it comes in. Our final game of the week sees Mr. Cook's adopted team of Manchester City taking on Wolverhampton Wanderers, their nemesis from earlier in the season. They were beaten by Wolves earlier in the season. And Wolves have been a bit of a thorn in the side of Manchester City in previous seasons. It's Mr. Cook's team. He will therefore go last. I have got them to not be a thorn in the side, however, as I've gone for a 4-1 Manchester City win. I've got 2 for Haaland, a goal for Grealish, and an old boy return for Nunes for Man City, and then a Juan. Stu?
I have almost got the same score this time, not exactly the same score. I've got a Manchester City 3-1 win. Also had a little look at the old boy thing, so yeah, I've got Nunes as well. I've gone for De Bruyne. Might not be a diving header this week, but De Bruyne. And for the third Manchester City goal, thought it's probably about now that we'll get some sort of really odd goal scorer that we've not had for a while. So I've gone for Kyle Walker to score the third. For Wolves, I've got João Gomes.
João Gomes. Go on then, Mr. Cook. You have the right to polish us and finish us off this week.
Pretty sure that's a different podcast.
You lucky boy.
I'm pretty sure it's a different video, and I'm pretty sure it's featured on a different website too. Where this one will be fine. I can only presume you have already written my prediction down. Word for word.
0-2 Alvarez Haaland. Or 2-0, sorry. 2-0.
I mean, it's almost like you've read my mind. That's exactly what I've put down.
You heard it here first, folks. 2-0 Alvarez and Haaland to notch the goals. So, that is week 40's predictions in the book, done and dusted. Do we have for what seems to be potentially the last full week of the season some odds, Mr. Woman's Dick?
We do, and it's thrown up what I think feels a little bit strange results in terms of the odds given this week. Normally, I would always expect the three draws to hit the highest mark on the odds. However, this time around, we will go through in reverse order. Nottingham Forest, Hull and Middlesbrough to beat their respective opponents this week will net you just over 5-1. So all three teams kind of expected to do the business. We shall see. Those odds do jump massively for the draws, which will net you just under 55-1 if all three of those teams draw. However, if we are absolutely shit in the bed this week, for Sheffield United, Watford and Plymouth to win, which, by the way, I don't think is that far out of the question on the basis of Sheffield United and Forest both fighting for their lives, anything could happen. Watford and Middlesbrough are probably halfway to the airport by now. Again, anything could happen. Plymouth still fighting for their lives. Anything could happen. The odds on our three teams losing are 62-1. So that's higher than the draws, which is absolutely bonkers in my estimation. But still, at least if all three teams do lose, I'll still have a tiny little bit to be happy about.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Your odds for the week. Thank you, as always, to these two wonderful gentlemen for joining me to go through the ins and outs, ups and downs of our respective football teams. Join us again next week, where we'll go through the results. Hopefully, Hull will have done enough to procure themselves a place in the post-season dance that is the playoffs. And fingers crossed, if they do find themselves there, they have a little bit better time of it than I did last year with my team, Middlesbrough. But, as always, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for watching us on YouTube. Thanks for listening and downloading the podcast. Tune in again next week, where we'll break it all down and we'll do it all again for you. Until then, thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves. Look out for each other. And we'll see you next week. Happy bye for now.
So there we go, what do you think to that? Season's not almost over. Or maybe not. Find out next week if that is the case. Fingers crossed for, well, let's face it, fingers crossed for the whole boys. Big thank you for watching, big thank you for listening, big thank you for being here. Before you go, a few little bits. Do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave reviews where you can leave reviews. And check out the website, thecookiecast.com. There we've got social media links and an email button. And that way you can get in touch with us. That is it for this one. Till next time, I'm going to say bye. And I'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to these grumpy old men talk about football. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share and subscribe.